The small, spare Alcalde had vanished from the flying deck above them. Now he strolled out onto the foredeck.
You're seeing what it looks like from the outside, my friends. Now, would you care to tour the streets of our city?
Sure. I'm interested in seeing your operation.
Then see it you shall.
Don Tenorio held up a spare brown finger. The helmsman in the glass-enclosed cabin put the wheel over. The boat heeled to starboard, curved toward a watery avenue that led between two looming buildings, one of which had broken off 100 feet or so above, another that soared, apparently intact, a good 20 stories. The boat slowed to a putting creep.
With the constant earth tremors, things are constantly falling into the water. Also, existing snags sheathed unpredictably, or structural steel members can be thrust without warning into channels that yesterday were clear. Besides, we don't wish to swamp anybody's home or garden with our wake.
He had a point. Off their port bow floated a growing plat, perhaps 100 feet square, its furrows of dark soil sprouting knee-high corn plants. To their starboard rode a houseboat of sorts, or perhaps a floating shanty, rising 2 stories above its gunwales and seeming to have been cobbled together of colorful panels of plastic, or to be in the process. 2 men and a woman were engaged in fixing a new sheet to the upper story, the woman on the roof, 1 man on a ladder that the 2nd man steadied from the deck. The woman and the man on the ladder waved cheerfully to the boat as it prowled past. Don Tenorio raised a hand in reply and beamed.
For a century, people shunned this city, thinking it accursed, believing horrific spirits stalked its streets and canals. We had to sneak to the ruins in our boats like thieves in the night, lest we be attacked for running the risk of disturbing the evil ghosts and bringing the wrath upon the surrounding villages. Danger we found here in abundance, even death, but no curse. For our daring, we have won great riches. And now that we have, through our sweat and ingenuity, regained a foothold in this once great city, we can dare to hope to envision the day, maybe not in our lifetimes, maybe not for many lifetimes of our descendants, when it is one day great again.
A most inspirational dream. May you and your followers realize it.
But Ryan felt a chill scurry like a small scaly mutie down his spine as they passed between the giant structures and into the ruin itself. Only the shade, he told himself. But then Christie caught his eye and gave him a slight smile that was almost a grimace, and he wondered if her scant, sporadic Dumi powers were showing her some foreboding glimpses into the future of the Baron and his pioneering people. Not our future, he told himself, or she'd say something. He moved to her side, the right, laid a hand on her unwounded shoulder. She reached up to cover his hand with her own. In some places, the remaining structures crowded to either side of them like glass and stone and steel cliffs. In others, they fell away to leave the Paloma crossing broad swatches of open water, covering what had been plazas to begin with, or places where nothing taller than the lake was deep had survived the quakes. From one such, the companions all pointed and made wondering noises at the spectacle of 3 skyscrapers, 20 stories high and more, that had been felled by one falling against the other so that they lay tilted like dominoes. The last was propped on the semi-crushed remnants of a building that had either been built shorter or had itself snapped off.
Impressive devastation.
Just how many followers Don Tenorio had, trying to wrestle the city back from that devastation, chaos, and the elements, neither the Alcalde nor Fivax had specified. Although they seemed well-meaning and open-spirited, perhaps too much so for the age, Ryan had to admit they were far from foolish. Their habit of talking freely, even expansively, of their efforts seemed always somehow to skate around giving information that might be of great use to ill-wishers, such as their numbers. Still, from circumstance, Ryan knew they had to number in the hundreds, perhaps as many as 1,000. JB sidled up to Ryan.
Haven't made much of a mark on the place, however many of them there may be.
Ryan's old friend was right, as usual. As they cruised cautiously along the waterways between the half-destroyed structures, they saw pockets of concerted activity. Here, people clearing rubble from a floor 2 stories above the green water that had been completely exposed by the devastation. There, people loading cardboard boxes into a flat-bottomed boat. All of them greeted their passage with a cheerful wave. Most of them seemed to be armed, carrying hand blasters holstered or standing watch with ready long blasters. Tenorio glanced up from his chart as the big boat began to slow still further,
I have arranged for you to view one of our explorations. It will give you a chance to meet some of us doing the actual work, see how we live our lives.
Ryan nodded. He was a little dubious himself. The WAG was approaching the flank of a building faced in glazed stone of a rusty red color that leaned crazily against the black tower next to it. A bumper of tires had been hung between two glassless windows with a blue nylon rope so that they hung level just above the water. A houseboat was anchored a few yards down the street. Evidently, it had been moved to allow the Paloma room to pull in. As the boat slowed, a crewman tossed a line up to an open window. Hands grabbed it, made it fast within, then a rope ladder was tossed down.
My friends, we have to use the ladder, I'm afraid. I regret the inconvenience of having to scramble to get inside.
We've done worse, maybe a time or two.
By unspoken consensus, Jack, with his predator's instinct for danger, swarmed up first. Christy went next. She negotiated the swaying ladder with neither hesitation nor visible difficulty. Ryan still wondered if she wasn't being ballsier than was good for her. Still, he trusted her judgment implicitly in all things, and who would know better what she could handle? As he followed her up into the cool depths of the building, the unmistakable sound of a muffled shot came echoing from within. Ryan rolled over the top, came up with his Sig Sauer in hand, or tried to. What he actually did was half-roll, half-skid down the canted concrete floor until he fetched up into what proved to be a waist-level web of bungee cords. After only a moderate amount of flailing with his left hand, he was able to get his feet under him and recover. He was glad he'd had the blaster's safety on. Laughing silently, Jack helped him disentangle with his left hand. His right held his shiny python. Christy stood down along the angle where floor met wall with two bearded male scabbies, her own blaster in hand. The younger and trimmer of the pair was just holding his hands up to her in a back-off-the-trigger gesture.
Our scout, she's fine. No threat.
The others joined them with a minimum of comedy. Doc slid down on the seat of his pants, maintaining great dignity. The carpet had been devoured long since by some sort of ugly crud, so that now all that remained of the floor covering were patches of powdery yellow fungus. Ryan didn't have the heart to tell the older man the seat of his trousers was now bright yellow. The scabbies on station were introduced. The one who spoke English, a middle-sized guy with thick chest and shoulders, very sleek black hair, and carefully trimmed beard framing his broad, oblong face, was Ricardo. The other, a big, unkempt guy with frizzy, wiry hair standing out in gray clumps to either side of his bald head like scrubbing pads, a scarred face with an unhealthy-looking potato of a nose, and an imposing paunch pushing out his blue-gray mechanic-style coveralls, was Teo. He wore a 45 1911 auto. Ricardo had a Beretta. Ricardo explained to them that they were surveying. Their team, the three of them and their scout who had fired the shot from somewhere off in the ventilation system, were basically mapping out what parts of the buildings on this block were accessible, what they had been, and how likely they were to reward further work, either exploration or hauling out goodies.
This was just an office building. Not likely much useful. Still, who knows what we find.
How are you doing, Christy?
Christy sat on the sloping floor with her knees up. She had made sure not to plant herself in a patch of the chrome-yellow mold.
Fine, lover. Really. The energy I'm getting from all around is fantastic.
If you say so.
A cry floated out the hole in what had been the ceiling that gave into the HVAC ducts. A moment later, a figure came crawling out hand over hand on a rope that had been tied to a heavy, rusted hunk of desk and led into the hole. Ricardo scrambled up the wall to lend a hand. The scout allowed himself to be helped out and down, although the way he moved indicated he really didn't need it. Or she, Ryan realized. The face was so smudged with grime and overhung by a hard hat topped with a battery-powered lamp that it was hard to tell at first.
Allow me to introduce Claudia. She is my novia. What do you say, my fiancé?
Her face split in a bright smile. She came scooting down the angled wall. She wore a backpack. On the outside of it was lashed, of all things, a huge, dead, muty rat. The foreigners were quickly introduced. Claudia expressed pleasure at meeting them, in Spanish, duly translated by Doc. She seemed a pretty, vivacious little woman underneath the gunk. She had been creepy-crawling the other rooms and offices accessible through the ductwork. This apparently was her job. The nasty, claustrophobic, and dangerous work of crawling through the bowels of a steel and concrete stiff, looking to strike prime salvage. She had not found anything very worthwhile on this jaunt, until the rat had lunged for her face from a side vent, at which point she had popped it neatly between the eyes with her hand blaster. Now she unslung the rat and held it excitedly up for inspection. It was a suitably nasty-looking specimen, body a good 2 feet long, its orange incisors as long as Ryan's little finger. It looked to have a ruff or mane of quills like a porcupine, but that might have simply been extra-long guard hairs matted by immersion in none-too-clean water. Jack eyed it with keen red interest.
Good eats?
Claudia grinned even wider and bobbed her head.